If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, everyone. We are live with a new edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for, what is this? Wow, October 9th, 2013. We are into the fall. Alongside my compadre and somewhat friendly foe, Ian Ferguson, I am Pat Contry.
Howdy do.
Ian, how you doing in video game and hooded land over there?
I'm great. I'm comfortable. It was raining today. I'm in my element.
You like having this, the downfall of depression falling all over you?
Is gray that skies, is? Wet weather, hoodies, apple cider, alcohol.
So today on the show, we'll be talking about a lot of things. We'll be talking about the NES Marathon coming up soon. We'll give an update on that website crap. We'll just go over that real quick. The Marathon, we're still looking for donations at NESmarathon.com. We're looking for new sponsors. New sponsors are coming aboard. It's very, very exciting. We'll be testing, you'll probably do a dry run next week sometime on that, so that'll be good. I had a fun time in Portland, we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about stuff like the Kinect selling, potentially, user data, the Square Enix Collective Crowdsourcing Initiative that was just announced, ColecoVision on Kickstarter, and an Angry Birds movie, what? Mm. And, of course, as always, your Q&A, if you have any questions live in the chat, go on Twitter and use hashtag CUPodcast.
Absolutely.
So Portland came and gone, the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I was a guest there for the third straight year. And thanks again for having me, Portland, feeding my hoarding habits, as you can see behind me.
I did dishes.
You did dishes this weekend? Is that what you're exciting?
Yeah, I did dishes. Exciting time. I vacuumed.
You vacuumed?
Yep.
Tidied. But I picked up about $300 worth of stuff, which is less than last year, actually. And I sold some games. I sold some DVDs, met the fans. It was fun. I hung out with people from Retro TV and Pro Jared, who was almost like, you know, an affiliate. You know how the Avengers have their affiliates, like Spider-Man, nuclear bombs.
Everyone?
Yeah, like everyone jumped in. That's Pro Jared, I guess, because he was at the RetroWare booth and he was selling stuff, and Jared's the best. But I did the Retro Game Roadshow panel with Frank Cifaldi.
Nice.
Finally met him. He knew who I was. I was like, oh, Frank Cifaldi from Lost Souls. Oh.
He's a nice guy.
He was very nice. And Steve Lin and Chris Kohler. That was fun. And then I was part of the last 10 minutes of Ruse, the Way Games Work panel, which had Joe DeCur there in person, who was one of the architects of the 2600, which is amazing. And I was like up there not knowing what to say. And then, of course, I did Pat the NES Punk / Play the Punk Challenge video. It wasn't a video. It was a panel. And so I showed off a new Ask Frank, which will be out probably by Friday. This week, new Ask Frank Volume 8, which is going to be fun. I showed off the Pat the NES Punk completionist crossover Castlevania episode where I'm a guest star. Go watch that if you haven't out there. Go watch it, Ian. It's fun. It's fun times. Gerard's a very nice guy. He's, I don't want to say up and comer. He's got like 125,000 YouTube subscribers, and I feel like I'm an old man because he's like, yeah, you're one of the reasons I got into doing videos. And I'm like, that's cool. You're more you're more popular than I am. You know, it's like, it's one of those weird sort of things where I'm either, I didn't get as successful as I should have been, or I'm just too old. I should leave it. But so check out that video if you haven't seen it. It's great. And then also, yeah, I just bought a lot of crap. You know, I have on YouTube at my website right now. I have a like non-boxing videos that are now tradition I do after these events, and I show stuff like the Koala touchpad in the box. And I'm sure you have great comments on why I have that.
Because you have to have everything.
That's... Not everything, but interesting things.
I filmed your collection video.
You did. That was like an 8-hour ordeal, right?
I don't think I spoke to you for about 3 months after that.
And you're not going to watch it.
Ever. I did watch it. I watched the director's cut. I held the camera. I don't ever need to see it. I do have a question for you. What? Because I didn't know you did it again. When you do the Play the Punk Challenge, I remember the first time you did it, and I thought it was a fun concept, especially for fans. But I didn't know you did it this time. Do you change up the games, or do people love the Abobo death match so badly that you have to do that one?
There's always the favorites. You know, it's like when you do a concert, you have your esoteric garbage.
But you come to,
if you're coming to see the Rolling Stones, you don't care about their latest release. You know, you want to see Satisfaction,
sure,
Brown Sugar, you know, stuff like that. You don't. Maybe some Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. You know, so.
That's a different band.
Is that the Beatles?
It's an entirely different band.
Okay, then. My analogy was working before that. But you know what I mean, though.
Yes.
So there's always something I like to play. I always like doing the Bubble Deathmatch Challenge.
Sure.
Is a popular one. I like to rotate in ice hockey. Like the first to three goals, because that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
We did that. We did the TNC Surf Challenge. Which is funny because
You've always done that one.
That's the one I've always lost at. I usually win 95% of the time. That's one I always lose at.
Mm-hmm.
So we rotated that one. I don't want to give away if I won this time or not, but it was a fun. It was very close, and I always use Tuxedo Cat because Tuxedo Cat rules. So I always do that one. And then like other ones I rotate in, like Micro Machines Race or Excite Bike Versus, which I did this time. But yeah, there's always like three I kind of come back to the well. Last year we actually had him picked randomly someone from Rue. Who I told him not to do Spy versus Spy, and for some reason he chose it anyway, and it was 10 minutes of nothingness, and we couldn't win, so we stopped it. So sometimes I do a Contra first to lose three lives, you know, stuff like that. So it's fun.
Fun.
So yeah, well, thanks for the question. You know, that was very nice.
I was curious.
You almost cared cared about my career there for a second. Almost.
I was genuinely interested.
You won't watch the video when it comes out, but no. You know. So what else has been going on? I still haven't had a chance to go through all the submissions for contributors to the Punk Effect, because the NES Marathon is taking way too much time, and with events like Portland, it's just hard to get to, unfortunately. But it will happen. So you 50 plus people out there submitted. I'm not forgetting about you. I'll get to you at some point, one by one, and then I'll probably die right afterwards. And our secret project that I haven't had time to work on it for like a few weeks. So
the marathon's kind of taken precedent over everything.
Sure. So yeah, the website's still going on. Going to relaunch that within a month. The non-boxing videos out. So let's go to our topics. This one just came out in the past few days. A couple of these did. About Kinect potentially selling user data, I guess, from what they can gather, viewing you. One of their ad people was bragging about it to potential, or marketing people was bragging about it to potential advertisers. Hey, we can do this with the Kinect. And I guess once the word that got on the internet, Microsoft backtracked and said, whoa, we're not planning on doing about selling any information now, but if we upgrade our user agreement, we always could. So it's one of those things that I'm going to read the article real quick, but it's one of those things that people were like, oh, what's the big deal if the Kinect's always on? What's the big deal about DRM? You have to be always connected to the internet. It's about consumer rights and advocacy. That the fact that they even can do that is scary without really you knowing about it. And those user agreements are a mile long anyway, you know, so you're not going to read it if they update it.
I think my issue, or my the way I look at it is, it's simply confirming what everyone was afraid of, you know, the big brother in the living room thing.
Big Xbox brother.
The fact that the Kinect is no longer mandatory means that at least you have the option to opt out.
Sure.
You do, but it's still, to me, it's just, it's frightening that we've gotten to that point where, you know, we can have devices in the living room that can monitor essentially what you're snacking on. And then target those ads. You know, you're eating a bag of, you know, brand X gummy bears, and then, you know, 3 days later, that's what they're advertising to you on your menu bar. I thought it was interesting how Microsoft said that they weren't planning on selling it, as if to say, hey, we're not monetizing this data that we can gather from you yet, mm-hmm. So that makes it different. But it's still, to a lot of people, I feel like it's going to be an invasion of privacy. Frankly, if
it is,
yeah, it is. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that's I guess that's my point. Regardless of whether or not you take money for it, and regardless of whether or not the people hook up
people are going to be connected and not realize it.
Right,
that's the problem.
Yes,
90% of people are going to put it up and not even realize this thing even exists.
That is very true.
I mean, honestly, the casual person's not going to care about it or not know.
No.
But what I'm more interested, well, not interested, they're going to have to gauge, like, your reaction. Because one of the things I saw it being used for, not just, like, well, if I see you somehow detect you drinking, you know, a Tecate beer, we're going to advertise it next week. But seeing if you are paying attention to the ads and reporting back to the advertisers, basically the qualitative market research, that's what I saw it. One person in an article was suggesting. And actually, that's brilliant, but it's also, again, an invasion of privacy. To see if you're actually looking at the commercial being shown at the time or actually responding to it, they can go back to the advertiser and mark that up and say, we had this percentage of people that were attentive during it, they were laughing, or whatever else. That, again, that's scary. That's because an invasion of privacy.
Because it's... Sorry, not to talk over you. I know that's not a good way to do the podcast, but yeah, it's not even just that they can get, you know, very broad data. They can get very precise data as to what you're looking at, what you're listening to, sure, what you get up in the middle of and walk away from. I think what would be fun is if we could coordinate an entire nation to sit in front of their Kinect in their underwear and swig from bottles of Italian dressing and just totally screw with the sort of data that they collect. You know, I mean, just do something absolutely ridiculous.
Or just,
you know, just purposely screw with, you know, the data that they're collecting.
Just moon the people. Right. If you have a feeling to watch. Yeah, it's just scary, though. It's one of those things where you imagine even 10 years ago, this would be a possibility that advertisers would be able to see you in your living room.
Well, yes. Like, I mean, authors did for ages, but I mean, now we're actually at that point. I mean, I think we all knew that it was going to get there.
We're officially in, like, Minority Report land or going further back, Fahrenheit 451, you know, where you live in with walls around you that you can see and interact with, maybe interact with you. Kind of scary, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their official stance is. I mean, you can't take anything to heart yet because Microsoft has walked back every policy they've announced. Everything they've had, they've had some response to, because, man, they are just fighting loads of backlash and they keep trying to walk. So maybe they'll say they won't collect it, but it's just like how, you know, the iPhone, they say they're not collecting the fingerprint. You know, I mean, do you ever really know?
But the fact that they could, that's the whole point.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to, people were going after me on Twitter because I was like, DRM, not a bad idea for these reasons, this and that. People were like, oh, you just power. It's the fact that you're giving them the power to do it in the first place.
Well, because if you give them the features, like a fingerprint touch or a Kinect, even if they say they're not doing it, that device is in your living room. They can flip a proverbial switch on or off at any time to bring back those features.
So do you think Microsoft is going to carry through with it, or do you think that the potential, now that people know that it exists, they're not going to even be afraid to touch it, even though the revenue stream would be huge if they used it? It would be huge, the market research potential there. Market research is one of those few industries that there's never a downturn. When there's a recession, market research actually then increases because companies are even more careful about how they're spending their money.
Correct.
So that's why they probably saw this feature on there and be like, and maybe it wasn't by design, but then once they realized it, like, wow, this could be something that can make us maybe an extra $200 million, $300 million a year. And we didn't realize it until now. So that's not so easy to abandon as a business, something like that.
No, I think they will absolutely capitalize on it as a thing that a end user has to opt into. And like you said, I bet you a lot of people will opt into it without knowing that they're opting into it. I think that's how it'll be.
And that's the danger.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. As you take your swig. What, you want to talk about the collective or the ColecoVision Kickstarter first?
Well, the ColecoVision Kickstarter is interesting.
Start it off.
I like the Coleco. It's interesting to me only as far as I really like the ColecoVision. I think it's got a fun library of games. It's got some really good arcade ports.
I'm bringing up the Kickstarter now.
I don't know, it's just a system that I feel somewhat fond towards from an era where I don't care a whole bunch about Atari or Intellivision, but the ColecoVision I find to be fun. Mm-hmm. But the Kickstarter is really just for a collection of the games for iOS's and stuff like that. The problem is,
let's back up. What is the Kickstarter for? They officially got the license to the ColecoVision Rant Media.
Yes.
They licensed it. They're looking to reach $250,000 to bring back some of the games, at least, to an iOS app.
Which is not that exciting, because the ColecoVision uses a 9-10-digit keypad extensively for a lot of the games.
That'd be fun to put on an iPhone.
Yeah, and nothing has ever played well. No joystick-based game has ever played well. So it's interesting that there's I like that there's interest in the ColecoVision. I really wish that a collection of ROMs for a smartphone app was not what they were doing with it. If you told me someone was going to do a ColecoVision Kickstarter and they were going to make, say, the Coleco equivalent of an Atari flashback machine, I'd be pretty pumped about that, actually.
Sure.
I'd be very excited about that.
A
physical machine that was more reliable.
Like how they remade the Commodore 64.
Yeah.
At least.
Or they tried to do did they ever finish? I don't know if they did, but at least there was plans and prototypes of the MSXs on a chip. Like,
oh, really? See, yeah, I didn't know about that.
Give me something physical, and I'd be very into it. But, yeah, I'm done trying to play games like that on a phone.
Well, let's look at what they got the rights to here. It's on the Kickstarter page here. A huge list of games that were going to include initial release, including... So I guess including means these are the more popular ones they got. Okay. I mean, why would you... Okay. An Arctic Adventure? I'm not sure I even played that in the ColecoVision.
Okay.
Frenzy? That's, of course, a popular one. Which was kind of a follow-up to Berserk. Ah! Advertisement!
Don't worry, guys. We're just playing in the Bush Leagues.
And that was my webcam, seeing what I like. So I like food. So this is the list of games that they have. Frenzy, good game.
Yeah.
Pepper 2.
Pepper 2's good.
Bump and Jump.
Awesome.
Jumpman Jr.
Nice.
Space Fury. That's one of the more popular ColecoVision titles. Destructor. Yeah. That was the one with the pedal.
Yeah.
Montezuma's Revenge. And Zaxxon, which is one of the best arcade port back then. Yeah. So, and the full list of titles. Here's some more. Blackjack Poker, no one cares. Brain Strainers, no. Fortune Builder, no. Jumpman, well, they have Jumpman Jr. Jungle Hunt, okay. Miss Space Fury, really? There was a Miss Space Fury? Super Action Boxing, no one's going to care. Super Action Football, no one's going to care. Super Action Baseball, no one's going to care. And Super Action Soccer, no one's going to care. So it actually sounds worse. Because when you realize they won't be able to get the license for stuff like Donkey Kong Jr. from Nintendo, they won't be able to get a lot of the arcade ports, probably. Because they don't own them.
I wasn't necessarily holding out for Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong Jr. What I would have hoped to have seen is Mr. Doe, because that's a really good version of it. And this is obviously maybe wishing, but Smurfs is kind of an iconic Coleco game.
That was the only system it was really on.
No, it was on Atari as well, but it just wasn't as good.
It didn't look good.
Yeah.
Or Pac-Land.
And I would have liked to have, this one is just a wish, but it had a great version of Star Wars arcade game.
It did. Hard to find.
Yeah.
Uncommon ColecoVision game. So they want $250,000.
I feel like that's a lot for what they're doing.
Once they get the rights, they just got to get the ROMs and make an emulator for it. And, I mean, you know what I mean? How hard is it? I'm sure that they'll probably even use an emulator on the internet or license one already. There's ColecoVision emulators out there. So what exactly are they doing besides putting a wrapper around this and making a simple control scheme? What are they going to be doing?
I don't know. Look, I'm feeling somewhat restrained today. But, yeah, I feel like that's a lot of money for something that's not going to take a ton.
So it looks like it's $10 for the app. Get a copy of the ColecoVision app, free for life. Your name listed on the website's backer, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously the perks go up from there on Kickstarter. If you don't know, Kickstarter has levels of pledges and what you get for that. So my point is, $250,000 seems extreme for something that, unless the rights to all those games cost $250,000, which I highly doubt, because out of all those games, which ones are... You know, Bump and Jump, you think like, was that Activision? You think they would have charged a lot for that? Or
Bump and Jump.
Or Zaxxon?
Zaxxon was Sega.
They wouldn't... How much money could they possibly want for those? $5,000? You know, at most? For those games? You know? And again, it's like these aren't new games they're developing. No. These are going to be ROMs.
Right.
Put in a menu wrapper on an emulator for the iOS. There's been emulators on the iOS before they got banned. You know?
Yeah, when you sent me the topic list, I saw that and I got very excited. And then when I read about it, I was like, "This is not," I can't see $250,000 being raised for an emulation package that doesn't even begin to cover what the ColecoVision was best known for. And obviously, we're not going to get Donkey Kong, but we're not even getting the better arcade ports. We're not even getting Ladybug. Ladybug is great on there.
Mousetrap.
Yeah, you're missing a lot of solid stuff. And they're not even giving you the oddball stuff that probably wouldn't cost that much, but would entice people like Campaign 84, I think.
You know, oh, yeah. Okay.
The weird stuff like that.
Well, to their credit, they're saying they're starting out with that, but honestly, you think for $250,000, if you got like half the ColecoVision library, you know, or something like that, if you got like 80 games, then I could say, okay, 80's like the majority of the library, you know, maybe that would be something like, okay, that's worth it for that much. But this is like 20 games, and half of them no one's going to care about.
Even 20 better picked games would be more enticing.
Yeah, it just seems unfortunate, especially since, like you said, the joystick on a smartphone is terrible. I tried playing, I remember, 1943 at Comic-Con 2 years ago, when Capcom was finally coming out with like Street Fighter on it. It's awful. Right. It's absolutely awful.
It's miserable. The best.
You need one of those like MAME-cades or you know, those iCade things for that, at least to have a chance to play it. You know.
Yeah. The best games on a touchscreen device are ones that rely entirely on the touchscreen for, you know, control schemes that would only work on there.
But good for them for trying. But I said 250 grand is that might be a little rough. They're at $3,333 with 29 days left. God bless them.
I didn't know you were religious. Continuing on.
Speaking of Kickstarters, I should mention the one that I'm involved in, kind of not on the side. The Retro Magazine Kickstarter started on Friday with a lot of big writers attached. It's Mike Kennedy, who's the guy who runs GameGabble.com, which is a gaming basically a gaming auction site like eBay, which is for gaming. And Jeremy Parrish is going to be involved. Chris Kohler is going to be involved. Sean Baby is going to be involved. And I met him in Portland. I didn't get a chance to bring that up. I want a second. And then Mike asked me if I want to do a column. So that's going to try to raise money to be a print magazine and also digital. And if you donate to the print, you'll get the digital free automatically, which would be nice. And it's going to be something like 50 plus pages every 2 months. Mostly, they said minimum advertisement, which is good. And they'll be covering new games that are retro themed or base, and retro games and indie games that are retro themed. So basically run the gamut of retro. So we'll see what happens with it.
So they might do something like a Jellico showcase followed by a review of, say, DuckTales Remastered.
Or exactly. Like you got it. Or then an indie game that's retro themed, which is that's the thing about retro gaming. Now it's coming full circle because of that.
I think that's fantastic. I think retro gaming is the perfect fit for a magazine, because I miss print media. I miss getting a magazine and flipping through it and dog-earing the pages and taking it with me and having something to read on the bus or the plane or whatever. And I don't always like reading on a screen, especially a smartphone screen, because my eyes are awful. Mm-hmm. But you know, with modern games, it you know, the way that we get our information through the internet and whatnot rendered the magazine useless, because you get all that information before you get the magazine. But since it's covering a topic that's already been covered, that already exists, there's no being late to the party. You're just getting something based on what you like, and that's very nice. Especially if they can do nice layouts and the production quality is good, you know, it should be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm trying not to pimp this too much because I'm involved with it. I mean, it's for the magazine, not for me. I'd be a paid writer if it got going. But they have a professional layout artist on the Kickstarter page for it. It's Retro Magazine. I'll put a link on YouTube if this is going to be on YouTube. And there's a professional layout. There's like a 20-page like preview of it with some articles written. And it looks nice. I think it's going to be, if it gets going, it's not going to be something you know, cheesy. It's going to be something worthwhile. So that's all I'll say about that. But speaking of Sean Baby, I finally met Sean Baby. If you guys don't know who Sean Baby is, he's basically the first guy to ever do like funny, comedic online video game reviews, but written back in like 96, 97. And he was one of the first quote unquote like internet celebrities or personalities. And, you know, he's a little bit older. He's probably like, you know, 36 by now, 37 up there. But yeah, he was one of the reasons I started doing game reviews, because his sense of humor is outstanding. He's an outstanding comedic writer. And he never goes in these events, though. He's not at MAGFest, he's not at PAX. He might go to E3, or used to for he's right for EGM, because he's not a video guy. He's been in some he's been on some TV shows in video form, but he doesn't create videos. So he's a writer, so he's less known. Like a lot of the people out there don't know who he is. He didn't have a panel in Portland, unfortunately, because people are like, who the hell is this guy? But he was like one of the pioneers of, like, you know, sort of internet, like I said, internet celebrity. But he's the nicest guy in the world, down to earth. One of those guys that said, hey, you know, we should hang out later and have a drink, and then actually, when you showed up, you think, like, oh, well, he's just busy with his friends. Then he actually, you think he's gone. He swung back around and sat by with us with his friends for, like, a half hour and talked and, you know, shot the shit. Like, one of those sort of guys. It's really says what he means what he says sort of things.
It's like I said to you when we talked about it before. I mean, it's a guy that I grew up reading. I was in late high school and I read him, but, I mean, he's hilarious. I mean, I laughed till I cried. You know, my dad asked me what's going on, you know, and I'm reading it in the office. But I think he was extremely well known for a while, and there is a whole new generation of people who know who, say, you are, but they don't know who Sean Baby is, and that blows my mind. But it is, there's a pretty big time gap there. Mm-hmm. But I think because of when he got big and how he got big and when he did it, through written articles and not through videos, he didn't have that exposure that you and I maybe think he did, which keeps him more grounded.
I think he still has it to some degree, but that from the, it's a whole different universe, the fans of the video YouTube content versus the written.
Sure.
So he writes for crack.com, so I think he's brought that over, but it's a whole different, like, you'll never see, like, the fans of crack.com go to other, like, video game websites. It's totally different. And unfortunately, he never did it. He never had that crossover in the mid-2000s. When YouTube came, he would have been huge. He would have been the biggest thing. But anyway, so I met him. Nicest guy. He was showing off a game called Calculords, which is like a card strategy game where you have to, like, input, like, for to get cards, to play cards, to push your characters forward, like, in, like, a war assault. I looked at it for a minute and a half. It seemed like there was a lot of thought put into it. People were saying it was actually almost too complex. But it's out. I think it's like 99 cents, and he's been developing for like 4 years. So that's what he's doing now, and he has other projects going on too.
What's it on?
It's iOS, Droid.
I'll have to check it out.
99 cent apps, Calculords out there. So that's my Sean Baby plug for everyone. Since, you know, I don't say he's my hero, but, you know, when you're a young guy, I have his T-shirt that's 15, 20, you know, 20 years old that I wore my first review, my fifth anniversary review. I wore my Aquaman Sucks, and this is a guy that. He's the guy that said Aquaman sucks before anyone else. He's the guy that was making fun of and writing about the Hostess Fruit Pie 70s comic ads before anyone even knew about him. You know, he's a guy that was, you know what I mean? He was on the cutting edge of all the stuff that now we take for granted about on the internet.
Well, and I mean, to not to get too sidetracked, but I mean, his partners in crime, especially when he did, you know, his great E3 write-ups, were Chet and Eric from Old Man Murray. I mean, who were hugely well known. They were the Sean Baby of the PC game world, and they went on to become writers for Portal 2, okay. Left 4 Dead. They work for Valve. They're high up at Valve, so there's, I don't know how to say it, good stock there. Like, I mean, there that was a very interesting group of people, and they all continue to write. You know, just the guys from Old Man Murray now write for games, and he continues to write for websites.
Yeah, but right on that cusp before. It was still, like, we're talking 97, 98, computers still were not in every household until the early 2000s, like 2003, we'll just say 2004. And so, again, and that was prior to YouTube. So that was before videos went viral off of, like, QuickTime embeds and real play, you know what I mean? And they were passed around literally viral through email, not just through Twitter or through YouTube. So, again, it was one of those things that if Sean Baby, maybe if he came up, you know, 6, 7 years later, maybe he would have went to video. I don't know. I'm just saying the whole point is that really cool guy. Awesome to finally meet him. He might be involved with the NES Marathon in some way. You know, it'd be cool getting Howard Phillips 1 year, Sean maybe the next. That would blow my mind. So.
Onward.
Moving on. Square Enix. Another, this was announced like today, I think. Speaking of crowdsourcing again. So Square Enix is going to launch a crowdfunding initiative that they're going to be involved in called The Collective. It's extremely interesting. And I can see other companies maybe following suit. So what they're going to do is have people basically pitch ideas to them for games and put it on an open forum and have people, after they review the idea, see if it's viable, have people vote on if they'd want to actually see it. And at that point, I guess Square Enix will get involved and back the idea through their own, you know, their own Kickstarter, Indiegogo. Actually, it's Indiegogo.
It's Indiegogo.
So it's like, it's almost like marrying from what, you know, crowdsourcing to now this is like crowd and company sourcing together in a way. It's almost like the company is listening to the fans, going to take certain ideas and run with them and see how they do with an Indiegogo. And that's still minimum risk to them because they have an idea that people are going to be vested in through their pitching of it. And then in the public seeing whether it's going to be viable and then getting funded partially, at least through the public eye. It's actually a great idea.
I like it mostly. It's vetting. They're vetting out these ideas, and I think if you're depending on what you're doing, depending on the particulars and fine print, if you're a developer, it's not bad, especially if you're fresh, because you can go to the worthwhileness of Square Enix's name at this point is debatable, but you pitch an idea to a company, and if this company likes it, if the community likes it, you can go into your Indiegogo. fundraising drive with way more confidence than you would. Yes. You'll have actual feedback. You're not just putting it up. You're not just getting your friends and your family in your ears telling you that this is a good idea. You are actually having industry veterans behind you being like, yes, no, and maybe. And that is a good thing. It, to me, is a little outside of what crowdsourcing is supposed to be, but I don't see that as a bad thing. I think it's a good use of it.
Sure, this is also a cool part of it. The publisher, according to this article, won't be turning away projects without explanation. Though actually, developers will get a full explanation for any pitches that don't make it through, through due diligence, and provide suggestions for what it might be to complete the game. That's really cool. At least you're going to have like a real video game company say, hey, this is why we don't think it'll work, or this is what you need to do to improve it. That's fantastic. That's so rare there for something like that to happen. There was a similar thing for Hollywood Scripts. Kevin Spacey's, I can't remember the name of it, where you something with street in the name, I think it was, and you would pitch ideas and through, but other people would tell you if it was good or bad, but it wasn't the actual company. This would be like if I went to Universal, you know, or Sony, you know, Columbia, and be like, hey, here's my script. Well, we don't like it, but this is why. That would never happen.
Give you a rubric brack with notes.
Yeah, know? Right?
Like, that'd be nice. The other interesting thing about this initiative, if I remember reading the article correctly, is they're actually not opposed to you potentially pitching ideas that use their IP.
Yep.
So if someone like me really wanted to make a Threads of Fate sequel and I could pitch a really good idea for it, maybe I could get that to happen. You know what I mean? So that's kind of cool. If you go through them, you know, you can use, potentially use their assets. So,
Do you think though that what sort of cut you think they would have? This isn't going to be free. Do you think if they run the, say they get behind it, say you give them an idea and we're not developers, say you give them a great idea and they get behind it, obviously they're going to take a cut, especially if they produce it. I guess that's what their side of it's going to be.
Well, that's what I said earlier when I said it really depends on the particulars of it. I like the way it sounds, but it almost does sound too good to be true. It depends on...
it's not going to be free.
Well, I know it's not going to be free, but obviously not. I really would be interested in knowing what kind of rights they will hold on your game if it does not use their property. What's the cut they're going to take? A lot of times these things that sound really great when you read the fine print end up being things that developers want to stay far, far away from, because if they don't get to retain control over what they make, then, you know, they could make the game, make money off of it, Square could boot them, and Square could take the property that they've made and continue it on without the original. So, I mean, we don't know because we haven't read that far, but I'm just saying the idea in a perfect world sounds very interesting.
Again, you described the Hollywood system with screenwriting. You can sell a script, and your script could only retain the main character's name and the title. It'd be totally different, but you're paid for. Sorry, that's what you get. That's the nature of it. You know, that could happen. And again, that's your choice, though. That is totally your choice.
Right. It is. There's a couple of recurring themes this podcast. One is crowdsourcing. The other is read the freaking fine print on things. Like, make sure you know what you're getting into before you click that yes button.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, we could even pitch an idea. You don't have to be a developer. You just have to have an idea and then see if it gets vetted and see if the crowd likes it. And then, who knows? And then the one good thing about it is that if it's Square Enix getting involved, it's not going to be one of these. You hear these horror stories from these games that never get made. The money disappears, and you know what I mean. That wouldn't happen with Square Enix backing it. If they're going to get behind and develop the game, they're not going to take $100,000, $200,000, and not make the game if they're the one running it. That'd be awful. PR. Are you looking at me like I'm strange? You think they would actually do that?
No, I'm not saying that they actually would.
The whole system would collapse. That can't happen one time. People wouldn't trust the system.
If they're
investing their time and money, and they're going to make the game.
Crowdfunding is shaky. I'm saying anything can happen. I don't think they would, but I'm saying that you can't rule that out.
You can't rule it out, but...
I know, I'm saying... I guess maybe we're talking about two different things. You can't rule out failure. You can't rule out the game failing, just like any other game in development would fail.
But if they're running the Indiegogo campaign and getting the money up front, they don't have a risk. It's only going to be, you know, they're probably going to get the money to make their game. And then after that, it's going to be profit. So what the hell?
Sure.
They're basically looking at people doing like the, you know, Mighty Number 9, be like, why can't we do that? But we're going to go one step further and get people's ideas they want to see, you know.
All right.
I think there's a lot of good potential here.
Over the course of talking about it, yes, I agree. There's a lot of good potential. The more we talk about it, the more I just think of things that have happened in the past that are similar, where you pitch game ideas and people will be like, yes, we will help you get it out there. And when you read the fine print, it's just awful for everyone. Well, it's awful for the people who are making it.
Well, but again, it could be one of those things that either never see it made at all, or maybe... But again, it's going to be vetted through the process. They're going to say, true, we like this idea. So if, again, if they change it too much, I'm thinking when they do this platform, they put it online, they're going to have like basic design template of what it's going to be and the features, and then people are going to vote on whether that's a good idea or not. So if that actually changed dramatically from that until the finish, obviously everyone's going to know, and they're going to be pissed because the game that they vetted is going to be totally different. So again, that's too much of a risk. The whole platform of the collective depends upon it being transparent and then following through on what the people want.
Yeah, I mean, so we're thinking a little bit further. I mean, really, we're just reacting to the announcement, and I think it could be very cool. It just, we'll have to wait and see what more comes out of it.
There you have it, the collective. Not the Borg, but we'll see if it ends up like that. And they're going to reveal more at the GDC's coming up, I think, and next month. They're going to reveal more about how it's going to work there. Right. So we'll see. All right, and then the last topic, short topic we have, this is just kind of one of those weird things. We don't talk about movies enough because, honestly, I don't have time for the movies. I'm going to see, you know, The Hobbit, Desolation of Smog's coming out, voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch of Sherlock Holmes fame. But how about the announcement of an Angry Birds movie?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is this an awful idea or just a really awful idea?
It's a really awful... Well...
And why?
I mean, what perspective do you want to look at it from? It's probably a great idea to the companies who want to make money.
Is it?
Possibly. Do you pay attention to what children are wearing when you walk around? Because in my mind, it's 95% of them are wearing Angry Birds t-shirts or have Angry Birds backpacks or are eating Angry Birds candy. The thing is, and without even touching on the movie, I played Angry Birds. I thought it was an amusing concept until I realized that it gets me stuck in this horrible, painful, obsessive-compulsive loop where every time I fire off a shot that's bad, I just restart the level. So I stop playing. And I think a lot of people don't play the game for that reason. Some people really get into it, and it is a cute idea. But how the hell do you market something that is literally just a slingshot game so... Yeah. Fully as they have with t-shirts in lunchboxes in Star Wars versions that apparently have story modes. It blows my mind. There's cartoons in the work. I think they've already been done. Breakfast cereals have probably already been done. This is
the problem. And this is the problem you have with any video game movie development. Where does the story come from?
Yeah.
Like, where do you get the story from when you're making this? You know, it's easier to make a story off of something like, you know, I don't know, Assassin's Creed, where there could be a story built in already. This is a little slingshot game. Yeah, it's a slingshot game, basically.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you come up with a story that's going to please everyone? Here's the other issue. It doesn't come out until 2016. If this is not a passing fad, no one's going to give a shit even 2 years from now, let alone three. So when it comes out, it might be like Bratz the movie. You know, it might be something where it'll just bomb horribly. So this is a big risk. This isn't like something like Super Mario Brothers that's out for like 25, 30 years. And then, by the way, a CG animated Super Mario Brothers movie, why not do that? That would be huge. Or Legend of Zelda. But anyway, but this is...
Don't.
This is a bigger risk, though. This is, to me, is a bigger risk.
It is. I don't like the idea because I don't like... I find it silly.
Like Chicken Run, maybe. That's the only thing. They make like Chicken Run.
Pigs bad, birds angry. Pigs in birds' house? So birds destroy their own house. I mean, I can't piece together the narrative when I play an Angry Birds game. And as much as you say Zelda and Mario, I don't think those are necessarily great for it either, because those are stories you make in your head. There's not a lot of dialogue to those. It's why they... I mean, it's one of
but
the
But there
many
would
reasons.
Be more dialogue versus Angry Birds.
Sure,
movie.
But I'm just saying that's still not going to be good. So, I mean, one of the many reasons that the Super Mario Brothers movie failed was they just didn't know what to do in terms of a story. They had no clue. How do you write a story about that?
They should have made an animated.
So now you're taking something like Angry Birds, which has even less of an implied story, and you're... I mean, it's... I guarantee you the trailer is going to have 80s hip hop, a vinyl scratch, and some fart jokes. You know, I mean,
bird farting or bird driving.
I mean, that's the joke with, you know, all trailers made for kids' movies these days, and that's what it's going to be, and it's going to be miserable.
In a world where birds hate pigs. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah. And then they blow up. And then they blow up. They kill themselves in the whatever.
Really?
I don't want to think about this anymore.
This is sounding worse and worse.
I don't want to
think. This is one of those things that never gets off the ground. They can just say it's in development and never gets off the ground. Why are you showing me your eyeballs like that? It's scary.
Oh, when I get stressed, I peel away at my face. When I get angry. Healthy. It's not healthy.
You're getting angry like the birds.
Didn't say it was healthy.
So, it's one of those things where... Like Mortal Kombat, I thought was a, for what it was, Mortal Kombat was a good movie.
I had a tough time going back to it, but yeah, the first one was pretty good because
that actually had a story to it.
Fighting tournament, Bloodsport proved a long time ago. I mean, you yes. don't need much. I mean, if there's a fighting tournament involved, you can figure out everything else as you go along. It's
just
that
fun martial arts, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because Street Fighter, I like Jean-Claude Van Damme, I like Raul Julia. Street Fighter actually got over complex with their
plot. Oh yeah, that was bad.
That's why Mortal Kombat actually succeeded at being a decent video game movie, because it was like, we're just gonna get all these people on an island and they're gonna kick the shit out of each other for an hour and a half. We're gonna play some of the time techno top tunes and
techno top tunes,
and that's the tune.
Was that an album, the Techno Top Tunes of 93, 94?
There was Utah Saints were on that, Orbital was on that, KMFDM was on that soundtrack.
I remember doing a remix in college of the Mortal Kombat theme.
I think everyone did a remix of the Mortal Kombat theme.
I had a radio show in college. I think I used to do funny things of that. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those. They've talked about doing a Halo movie for years now, so who knows if that'll
come out. I think they basically said that's not going to happen. Just like the Zelda one is always, they're like, no.
The Zelda one had an interesting. It was leaked. It was like a test footage.
No, it was
like
an April Fool's joke.
It was an April Fool's joke?
Animated,
not the live action.
I was going to say the live action was an April Fool's joke.
There was leaked footage of, I think it was from a couple years ago, of a CG one. Like, it was professionally done. It looked cool, but again, it's like, can you think of a story? You know, of a character that never talks.
One of the things I love about Nintendo's games is that they leave so much of it up to the imagination, but perhaps luckily for all of us, that makes it really, really hard to adapt it into anything but a game.
Sure. That was four quick topics.
Yeah. I'm having a day.
You're having a bad day. We did a little filming before for something. I won't say what it was, and we got through that.
Well, that was fun.
That made you laugh.
Yeah, you did make me laugh. That was humorous.
I
want
to hug you.
You made me laugh by being weird and gross. But
why else am I here?
What do we got for? What do we have for?
We're gonna go to CU podcast questions. Even people in the chat, if you're on there, real quick, Twitter hashtag CU podcast, and you can get on in on the fun. So let's see where we're gonna start here, on good old Twitter. And by the way, everyone out there. The Completely Unnecessary Podcast is now available on Stitcher for your Droid devices. They actually were cool enough to tweet it out a couple days ago. We got approved finally. So we're on iOS. We're on Stitcher. I think we're on something called Podbean or something else. So basically, once the RSS feed people know about it, I guess, through iTunes, it gets picked up everywhere. So, yeah, we're going to get big enough to get an advertiser maybe one day. That'd be fun.
Stitcher's a fun little Takate
beer
too.
What's that? Stitcher.
Stitcher's a fun little app. I've used it. I like.
Yeah, it's a Droid version of, you know, iTunes.
You can use it
podcasts.
On iOS too.
Oh, you can.
Yeah.
There you go. So let's go here. Let's start with the CU podcast question and answer. I should do
Sabor con character.
I should do a little production for this, like the question and answer with Pat and Ian.
Like I said, I can make up some ditties.
I did electronic music in college too. I know a little bit about production.
But did you do ditties?
Come on, what do you think the Flea Market Madness theme is? And they ask for anything. Those are ditties. I'm a great jingle writer, you have to admit.
I don't have to admit anything.
All right, let's start. Question from Adam Principe. How do I listen to your CU podcast on your website? Well, you go to the post that has the website, you know, has the podcast on it. That'll be up tomorrow. Or you go to iTunes.
ThePunkEffect.com.
ThePunkEffect.com.
There you go. And yeah, it's right there, or any of the places that we previously mentioned now have it. It's getting easier with each week.
MGeiger2341 asks us, have you joined the Force, Nintendo Force? Ian, have you?
I believe that's the new magazine. And no, I haven't, because I like Nintendo quite a bit. The 3DS is my favorite current system, but I don't want to subscribe to a magazine that is focused solely on one company, because my interest in games is spread a bit too far. I just don't really have the money.
Who's publishing this magazine? I had no idea.
I don't remember. I believe there was a Kickstarter for it as well.
Oh, there was?
I believe. And it's supposed to be very, very, very nice. I just, like I said, I don't have the money for system-specific magazines.
Yeah, within a year or two, it'll just be just the 3DS magazine that we use.
Yeah, at which point I might get it. But if half of it's devoted to a system I don't have yet and might not have,
Is it in stores or just digital? They've done 5 issues? Wow, I had no idea.
I believe it's print.
It's digital, $4.99, print plus digital, $19.99. Did I see that right? Wow. That's a lot for a magazine.
It is. That is. But to the Nintendo faithful, I'm sure it's very cool.
I was thinking like $8-$9 bucks for a magazine might be reasonable, but anyway.
In the modern era, I could see 10, but 20, that's tough to swallow.
If they don't have any advertisers at all, I can see that.
Sure.
But even still, that's hefty. It's 6 times a year. $120. I bet you 99% of people do digital anyway.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I thought I was joking at first with that. I was like, Nintendo Force? I was like, really? Nintendo
Force? No, it's a magazine. Good thing you have me.
Right. Power Force? That's kind of the name could be a better name, but whatever. I'm not going to get on criticizing since I'm now involved with the magazine, supposedly. So, next question. This is from at 7-Minute Psych-Yo. In terms of collecting, how do you manage security, e.g. from burglary? Does insurance cover video games? How do you manage security? Well, you hope people don't break in and get your stuff or get yourself a gun and shoot them. I don't know. But in terms of insurance, if you have homeowner's insurance, it covers it. Anything in your house from theft or damage up to a certain value. It could be $25,000, $50,000 or more. Depends on how much coverage you want. It's nothing special. It covers everything. It covers your dishwasher, your clothes from getting stolen, anything. Cadbury cream eggs, when I still have like 12 left from Easter last year. But in terms of games, it's the same thing. Now, there is something called collectible insurance that's out there at Comic-Con. There was even a guy selling insurance for stuff to cover stuff, especially like video games and comics, video games. The difference between that is that since they specialize in that, they know more or less, I guess, they know what is actually viable for your claims. They know what's out there. The good news with me, though, separate from that, and I've thought about doing that extra. I mean, I have homeowner's insurance, so a chunk would be covered if something bad happened. Good thing I have this mostly documented in the video you helped out with as evidence and my other videos, so people would know that, hey, I have a shitload of games. You know, and it's very well documented also that I have both NWC cards, even though those are not kept on the premises. Hear that, burglars? They're not here, so don't come here. So homeowners insurance, you can always get extra insurance out there to search online.
We keep those in my oven.
Actually. In your oven?
Yeah. And I use old-fashioned methods. I use circles of salt and hexes, and that keeps most people away from my shit.
Circles of salt. Okay, we're going way back to the pagan rituals then. In terms of collecting hand, okay. This is from Jace Nakarado, and I think he was getting on me for not pronouncing his name right in the last 2 weeks.
I think it's Nakarado.
Sure.
I mean, he hyphens it out. I saw the question.
Okay. You said it correctly. I didn't. Sorry.
One of us, Jason. Will. He'll let us know.
Yo, Pat and Ian, what's your best game pickup story in the wild? Store, flea market, ? P.S. Pat, play more handhelds. Thanks, guys.
You should.
What's your best game pickup story in the wild? You first. You've had a few good ones.
Yeah, I've had a couple good ones, and I'll do 3. The 2 best were, well, if you want to talk about single game pickups, were I've found both the Keltron 6-in-1 complete in the box in the wild for, I believe that was 12.
Which I bought from you. You still haven't found that box for me.
Yeah.
Or 12, manual.
12 bucks.
Find them.
That got me to see Daft Punk.
Find them.
I sold it to you. Yes. And then I got a box complete, Action 52 with the comic for about 15. Now, this was 99, 2000 at the latest, maybe 2001. So this was quite a long time ago. But even then, those were, I mean, in that condition, those are probably $5,500 complete, I would say. You know, they should have been.
$7,500? What did you say?
50 to 75 to 100.
At the time, 99 an Ash for the 50, two
would have been 50. I think
$50 at most.
I think 50. The Caltron would have been more.
Maybe I wasn't tracking prices for everything in 99.
I know the Action 52 would definitely have been about 50.
I mean, I got mine for 50 plus complete in 2008. It was still that cheap.
Yeah,
but that was a deal. It was probably like 80, 90. That was the one that kind of slid under the radar until probably James Rolfe reviewed it, probably sure. For the most part.
But those were cool to find in the wild. I think my favorite in the wild purchase, and I'll try to keep it quick, it wasn't really a game so much as it was a store. There was a place in the basement of the Eaton Center in Toronto, which is a huge shopping mall in
the
Toronto.
The Eaton Center?
Yeah.
I thought it was a giant place, just like a restaurant.
No.
The Eaton Center.
The Eaton. Eaton apostrophe. No, it's a giant mall in Toronto, and in the basement there was a video game store called Video Game Connections in about, this would have been 99, and they just had a case just filled, probably 300, 400 sealed NES games. All of them.
Wow.
All of them between $5 and $15 Canadian at a time where the US dollar was getting you $1.50 to $1.40 to $1.50 Canadian.
So you could have cleaned up.
So what I did was, is I went back and my parents gave me money and said, buy your Christmas presents. And I bought 15 sealed Nintendo games. My parents wrapped them all and gave them to me for Christmas, and I relived my childhood by opening 15 sealed Nintendo games, and that would have been like right before 2000 rolled around, and it was awesome.
That's a great, great story. That's about the time, 2000, when it wasn't so far removed that something that could happen. You could find boxes of sealed games or new old stock.
Yeah, it wasn't like...
Rental stores were just starting to get closed out from Blockbuster in the late 90s. They were starting to get knocked out, so they were going to get rid of their games and stuff as well.
That's my thing. It wasn't like... I don't want to imply that was an insanely good deal. It was a good deal, but it wasn't insane.
It's insane to find it at the time.
Right. Yeah. You look at what a sealed average PlayStation game goes for now, and it's about... I mean, it's a little bit more than that, maybe 20, you know, for a decent one. But I mean, I got most...
Cheapos are $5.
I got most of the Disney games sealed. And like I said, it wasn't like it was just cool to find them all in that spot, and that was a really fun morning to like rip the seal off of all of these games and then go play them.
How could you rip the games off the seal? Oh my god!
Because it was goddamn fun. So
we're gonna have another controversy in the comments. But
yeah, well,
it's a hypocrite.
People do hate me.
Hey Pat, how much are you selling your games for?
I would like to see some transparency. I demanded of my internet celebrities. What was your best friend? Fine.
Well, first I was gonna say I still marvel at the fact that an Action 52 got all the way from Florida to Buffalo, but somebody had moved with it. That to me is really weird.
Yeah, just sitting there, chilling in a box.
The or the one person that was unlucky enough to actually order it.
Yeah.
From the commercial they somehow got from the magazine. My best find in the wild? Best game pick? I saw this before that. I haven't had a lot of great game finds in the wild. I don't count the NWC as in the wild. I didn't find that at the swap meet.
It was in the wild for me. But yeah, different.
I found a Zombie Nation when it was a $140 game, so that was like last year. And I got it for $10 from the reseller. Caught him slipping. And of course, and you know what? And I don't care when I do that. First of all, to get away from him. But also because these are a lot of games that I spent a lot of money on eBay for to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's a little retribution for myself. But I was never good at finding NES games. I was always good at finding systems. My Sears Telegames, what was it called? Video Arcade 2 or whatever. Basically, the Sears Telegames 2 in the box complete. That's extremely hard to find even loose. I have it complete in the box. What was the other one? Atari Jaguar in the box, complete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that that I find more often than not.
Yeah, so. When you call me up every week with your...
It's not every week.
It's every week with your with your flea market finds. It's always systems and stuff that you find that are cooler than games. You definitely are luckier with hardware.
It's drying up. With so many sellers, even the past 2.5, even 2 years, not even 2.5, but last 2 years, so many more sellers, even past a year and a half, that... You never see Super Nintendo games anymore. You never see N64 games.
Yeah.
It never gets to the point because 6 o'clock in the morning, the other sellers walking around getting them.
You just walk around the flea market and it's just nothing but crying children and collectors just sad and
well,
upset.
Crying me.
But no,
seriously, you think Super Nintendo games don't exist anymore because you don't see them. It's like the strangest thing. You'll still find NES games once in a while, but you won't find like 25 Super Nintendo games sitting there.
I see them every day.
Yes, because you work in a store. this is from Ian Montgomery, who actually writes at The Punk Effect. Ian Montgomery, 86. He's the movie reviewer on the site. He does Third Door from the Right.
Hello, another Ian.
or second door. I don't remember. Have either of you seen Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity? If so, what were reactions? No, we haven't seen it.
We actually discussed this before the podcast. Yeah. I would like to. It struck me as odd how this was a movie where it seemed like there was no holds barred on spoilers. It was like the day it came out, everyone was talking about it everywhere. I've done a good job of not paying attention to it, but I realize I need to go see it very, very soon if I want there to be any movie left for me to see. But I would like to catch it.
Alfonso Cuarón did an amazing movie called Children of Men. Mm-hmm. That was fantastic. I saw it in the theater. Clive Owen creates an actual sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And really, really good. He also did, I believe, one of the BMW short films that Clive Owen did 10 years back. Remember those?
I do.
Those were the first time, really the first time, 2003, the first time that you had companies really advertising via the internet. That was really the first
time. Yeah, I'm trying to remember those because I do remember them.
I have on DVD. They did two seasons, and then you had big directors did those. You had Guy Ritchie do one.
Yeah, okay, that's the one that I remember more.
There was eight total. There was five the first season, three the last. You had Ang Lee do one.
Yeah.
You had the late, great Frankenheimer, yeah, he did one. Anyway, so Clive Owen was involved with that. I guess they hooked up again for Children of Men. But anyway, he's a great director. But no, we haven't seen it. It looks interesting. It looks different, at least.
Yes.
This is from Demon Owen Garth, Twitter. Have you ever really liked the look of a video game but had no idea how to play it, e.g. Dungeon Master for the SNES? I know exactly what I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's basically my entire lifelong fascination with fighting games. I love them, and I mean, the deeper systems are always beyond me. A more serious answer is, yeah, I've always been fascinated with, they made a version of it for the Nintendo, but it was always popular as a free game on Windows, that stupid Cell Life game where you click, okay. I've never understood the mechanics behind it. I'm sure it's easy. It's fascinating to watch everything
Mutant Virus?
Play out. Mutant Virus is the version of it on the Nintendo.
I couldn't figure that out when I played it a few weeks ago.
But that is definitely a game where, like, I love the look of it, especially just the simple Windows version, watching all the red and blue pieces, like, moving these patterns. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing in that game.
You can almost guess what I'm going to say. Will Harvey's the Immortal. It looks fantastic. I can't figure out what the hell I'm doing when I play it.
What you're doing when you play that, there's an emergent game that comes from that. It's called, it's like a little bit like Pokemon. It's collect them all, collect all the death animations. You want to see all 35 death animations in Will Harvey's the Immortal, and then you turn the game off.
It's like playing Space Quest.
Yeah.
They're fun. This is from at Yara of My Desert, who's Helen, who I know. For Ian, hi. What makes working a game store worth it to you in terms of enjoyment, besides the games? Happy face.
Well, thank you for the happy face. It's funny, the games, I was chatting with some new hires today about it. The first 6 months you work there, you spend all of your paycheck on games. And then by the time you've been there 7 years, like I have, you know, you get kind of sick of seeing them. It's not that you don't like games. So it's not the games. What I like about my job is honestly the people I have met through working there. I mean that seriously. When you work at a job that is so specific to your interests, you are likely to meet people who are similar to you or people that you will get along with. I have met Pat through the store.
Who's Pat?
Fuck you. Wow, this harsh. Asshole sitting across from me.
That's harsh.
I met my girlfriend, whom I love very much, through the store.
You didn't tell me that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I met Bonnie through the store. I met two of my closest friends in San Diego, Anthony and Art, through the store. I've had so many good conversations, and I've met so many cool people, so many good stories. You know, I remember these two customers who moved away because of military reasons. Yeah. But, you know, we were all on a Power Rangers kick, and they finally got a copy of the Power Rangers fighting game, and they brought it in. And we basically just stopped doing work for 2 hours, and we sat around playing Power Rangers fighting game on the Super Nintendo. And that's what I really love about my job is it's not the easy access to games, which is what people think. And people also think that we slack off and play games all day. We really don't.
No.
Stories like the one where we played the Power Rangers fighting game are two, three times a year, maybe. But I mean, at least five times a week, I have a really good conversation with someone, and one good customer makes up for all the asshole customers. So, yeah, I meet a lot of cool people through my job.
Oh, there you go. All right. That would be more funny, but all right. No, I'm kidding. next up, this is concerning my series for Ian again. And by the way, you keep slipping back more out of the camera, which I think is funny. There you go. What is your favorite regular show episode?
Oh, man.
this is like a trick question. You have to actually watch them to know.
He's not talking about you.
You think so? What is the only thing he's
regular show's about? A cartoon.
Oh, he doesn't have it capitalized.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. I like the ones where... the thing about regular show that I like the most is that the characters are very fleshed out, despite the fact that upon initial looks, the show is just random and stupid. And it's not. The characters have a lot of development, so I like the episodes where they develop the characters the most. So my favorite episodes would probably be Camping Can Be Cool, because I like any episode that has Mordecai, Rigby, Eileen, and Margaret in it.
No idea what you're talking about.
That's fine. You don't have to. The question wasn't for you. I also like Wrap It Up, because that's a good Pops episode. I really like, there's like three or four episodes at the end of season four that really build on Benson. And Benson's my absolute favorite character in the show. So, yeah, I would say probably Camping is Cool and A Bunch of Baby Ducks would be really close.
Look, great. Yeah.
Try watching something.
I do watch. I watch shows.
Burn Notice.
Burn Notice, it ended a few weeks ago. I'm very sad about that. Seven great seasons of fun.
Seven great Miami. Seasons of fun. Is that... That should be the tagline for your season 7 DVD.
This is from at Geron 0004. I guess Geron, who writes on the Punk Effect.
Nice.
On Overthinking It. On my podcast, let's play his own podcast. We discuss explaining the 90s to kids in the future. How would you all explain arcades? I would, if he means vintage arcades. Not ones that are around. Because I don't think arcades will ever totally die out at this point.
Let's assume, just for our talking points, that he's talking 88 to 98. Or so, like, height.
78 to 98.
Sure, yeah. Height of arcades, you know. Sure.
It is, you know, they were specialized video games that were not available to play on a console for the most part. At least they're the better versions for the most part. And they were gathering. They were very loud rooms. Usually bright colors, and it was a gathering of gamers that could come together and play games together, have fun. You know, it was a hangout. It was social. It was probably the first time you had socialized video gaming.
Right.
That's how I would describe it, and that's the reason why I think it's coming back, because people are recapturing that. It's not. It's a lot more fun to go to an arcade and see other people and play. You can play arcade games on your Xbox Live. You can play Final Fight. You can play Street Fighter. But is that as fun as going to an arcade and being with people? No, it's not.
Right. I would probably hit on a lot of the same points you did. You know, especially the the social aspect of it. What I would also point out, what I always thought was really cool about arcades, which is something that we will never really get back again because of the internet, is. The arcade was not only a social place where you went and played games against or with people, but it was where you exchanged information about games.
Sure.
That's how you learned the fatalities for your favorite character in Mortal Kombat. That's mm-hmm. how you learned how to play the tank game that was hidden in NBA Jam.
Yes.
It wasn't the internet. It was you knew someone at the arcade who told you.
It was on the cusp. 93, you could go online and like CompuServe and find it out, maybe. But most people didn't have the internet.
Right, the majority of people
95%
didn't.
Of people didn't have the internet in 93. Even less. It was also a place where you discovered new games for the first time. You had no idea what new games were coming out. Unless you had like a magazine in 80. Imagine going to the arcade the first time and seeing Pac-Man and be like, what the hell is this?
Right. Well, touching back on what you said, you know, a lot of games that came to consoles were arcade ports. And they were slightly inferior or very inferior. So you went and you played the real deal. But it was also, if you didn't have a subscription to a magazine, or once again, if you did not have access to the internet, this was where you got a taste of what would possibly be coming to your Genesis, Super Nintendo, Nintendo in the future.
But you had to go to the arcade in those early 80s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To see what was coming out. You probably had to go every month.
Yeah.
At least to see what games were coming in.
And then cross your fingers that the Atari 2600 port was even remotely close to what I think
at
that time
you can probably count on the fact that it wasn't. Yeah. Which is a shame. Think about back then how, it's like at least when Nintendo, by that point, it was a lot more enjoyable. It's like, okay, the ports were, you know, you can at least get by with the Jackal port or Contra. That at least the Contra port is actually better.
Yeah.
But imagine, you know, you go home, play Pac-Man 2600, and you're like, wow, this is even close. You're like, you have to go pump the quarters in. But yeah, I always say I grew up in the wrong sort of decade. I should have been born like 6-7 years earlier. I think I've been a lot better. I don't care if I've been older by now, but would have been a millionaire, would have gotten in the .com craze. But anyway, yeah, arcades probably were fantastic from like 80 to like 85. It was probably the best thing ever.
Oh yeah, but yeah. What I love is not to get too sidetracked, but it's a Namco thing, so I'm sorry. But you know,
surprise.
There's that game that no one likes called Tower of Draga, but it's huge in Japan. I like it. I like Castilian? The characters. I like the
is
art.
Is that Castilian?
No, it's not. I like the art. I like the characters. I like the idea of it. And it's a very cryptic game where you move through about, I think it's 50 levels. And on each level, there's a hidden treasure and you've got to meet these absurd requirements, like touch all four walls but they don't tell you what the requirement is. You just have to figure it out. And it's all very random stuff. And the way people who play it now look at it, they're like, this game is dog shit. How were you supposed to play it? Well, there's stories, and when Draga was released in the arcades, there would be people who would leave notebooks next to it, and when they'd figure out something in a level, they would write it down, and collectively, a group of people at an arcade would go through and beat this game full of secrets. And I'm sorry, we're never going to have something like that again, and that, to me, would have been something very cool to be a part of.
There you have it. Next question. This is from at tryandfindme_. Do you consider it ethical to download the ROM and emulate a game, which is very rare or very expensive to buy?
I think everyone does it at some point. I think if you're going to spend the money on it, if you're not a collector and you're a player, it depends on where you're coming from. If you're not a collector and you're a player, you kind of have to make sure you're spending the money properly.
In terms of the ethics for this topic, I equate it to music downloads. I always equate it to, first of all, if it's something that is readily available, in terms like say it was a new game readily available, then yes, it's not ethical at all.
No,
it's not at all. It's not even a point. But if it's something that you would never ever buy on your own, and that's how at least I justify people downloading MP3s. People would not go out and buy, you know, disco albums if they weren't interested in it. But they might still have some MP3s they wanted, and who knows? So I was looking at the thing where it's like, if you're not directly damaging a company, it's a lot more ethical than not. So if you're gonna go download the Flintstones Dinosaur Peak, you're not damaging Taito.
Well, anyway. Yeah, because that's kind of my take on it. Is I own one burn for the PC Engine. It's Sapphire because it's $500. And it's the one game that I would actually consider spending a lot of money on because I really like it. But I don't burn because I like the thrill of finding it and then actually playing it after working hard to find it, and get it. But Sapphire, whatever. The thing is when you're talking about these vintage systems, when you're talking about NES or PC Engine or something like that, a lot of the times if you download G.I. Joe and you play that ROM, you're not hurting. No one would get paid for it if you bought it off a shelf anyways.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were originally behind it aren't getting paid for it. People who are buying it are buying because they want to support a scene, they want to support a store, they want to own it themselves. But you're not hurting the original creators. No,
you're hurting a secondhand shop, but unfortunately...
It helps. But I work in a secondhand shop. That helps people like us.
Okay.
Because people are like, you know what? I'm going to decide between G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe Atlantis Factor. So I'm going to download both ROMs. You know what? I like G.I. Joe. They come into the store. They buy G.I. Joe.
So you don't see it as someone that would have bought it, but now is not. You feel it as the true sense of originally piracy was you try it out, then buy it.
And you do have people who will just download all the ROMs on their phone, but I cannot tell you how many times a day. Because really, it is at least once or twice. People come in, they look around, they're like, man, I got all these ROMs on my phone, but it's just not as much fun to play. And they pick up a couple of games. You know, sure, are we losing sales total? Yeah, probably. But is it still bringing people into the store to buy stuff? Yes. So sure. I don't see it as particularly damaging.
So that's like the argument of MP3s. You download artists, you might not have, you know, download them, you might buy the album, you might go see them. not supporting
and that. I think that depends largely on a person, too. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. This is... what do you guys... This is two questions. We might skip one, but we'll ask you anyway. At Slim underscore Miro Kujin, what are you guys currently playing? I'm not playing anything. What about you, Ian?
Currently, I think this is the answer I gave a while back, but I am still actually playing Animal Crossing and trying to collect Halloween masks currently. I'm playing Earth Defense Force... I realized this was humorous to me the other day. Playing Earth Defense Force 2017 on my Vita, which is a game in which you kill large ants that are attacking a city.
Oh, you told me. I think I had. Did I buy that one?
That's on the 360. 360 and Vita. And then I am also playing Bugs vs. Tanks, which is level 5 in Kaiji and Inafune of Mega Man fame. That's a game where you play as very tiny tanks fighting bugs. So I'm playing two bug fighting games right now. My mind is with Pokemon X and Y, which comes out this week. And I'm hoping I can get my hands on it maybe just a touch early if I get my shipment in on time. But that's what I'm really looking forward to. Oh, and I'm thinking about playing some scary visual novels like Corpse Party that you can get for the PSP.
I am playing something. Halloween. Well, I just played a lot of it. I played a lot of Rampart at PRGE.
Nice.
And guess who beat the shit out of Rue and Pro Jerry at the arcade version?
Not Pat you. Did. Yeah.
Not me. I'm the king of Rampart, baby.
Yes, he is. We every once in a while go to Nickel City up in up here, and
we haven't gone in a while. I play Wizard of Oz.
Oh, did you know that?
Fantastic.
I'll believe it when I play it. Also, I'll believe it when I play it because the jury's out. But High Dive's got the new Star Trek in.
That was there too. Portland had a great pinball selection. They had about 25 pinball. They had both Black Knights.
Black Knight 2K.
They had the they didn't have the gopher game. That was at the barcade down there.
No good gophers.
Oh yeah,
that was the golf one.
Yes, that was at the barcade ground control. That wasn't there, but no, it was fun. Wizard of Oz. It was fun. Yeah, the whole rule set. It was kind of distracting having the huge LCD.
I think,
all stuff going on, but I can see how they can use it better going forward.
If they don't rely on it, if I can still get most of my information from looking at the flashing lights, I'm cool with the added like eye candy of the LCD screen. Just I don't want it to all be up there.
Well, that's the thing. They had it like four different things at once. They had four different things going on.
See, that's what I heard, and I'm not super interested.
I think it would take some getting used to. But that was fun. I played a ton of Medieval Madness. I think I was getting ruined to a pinball. And Pro Jared, they love Medieval Madness.
It's amazing. It's
people get into it. They love it.
My buddy Lincoln, who posts on Nintendo Age, he hadn't really played pinball. And he sent me a message today. He's like, dude, that's it. I'm a pinball addict. I took him out to play pinball like once or twice with a couple of friends. It's funny. People don't play pinball because it's not around. But if you put someone in front of a machine that's themed on something they like, and you show them real quick, like, just a couple of the basic rules and how the machine works, it's so much fun to play with a burger next year, a beer in your hand.
Yeah, I want to get a machine. I'll get rid of this and get a machine, I think, at some point. That'd be cool.
I'm thinking about what my next one would be.
Hopefully Medieval Madness, because that's, like, my favorite by far. It's so fun.
It's fun. I played it to death. I don't need it. But so it is good. It is good. Have you played Attack from Mars?
Yeah.
Attack from Mars, I think, is Medieval Madness, but better. That would be the one, and it's a little bit cheaper too. And I think it's a faster, and I think it's a more fun machine.
It's the same company basically.
It's Williams. It's really basically the same machine. It's one bashed target in the center. Different modes.
The target in the center. It's
the saucer goes crazy. I'm sorry, I love it.
I know it's the same theme. It's almost the same number of ramps even. But all right, let's move on. The other question was from this person: Evolution Revival, the arcade, or merely a fad?
I think it's Barcade, I think that person mentioned, because I saw that one.
Oh, we said arcade here, but Barcade, Brewcade. I think it's I don't want to say it's a fad. I think it's people are getting back into the arcades through more people discovering gaming in general. I think it's a good idea. I think it's going to stick around for a while.
I think it's, I hope it's not a fad. I think it's here to stay. People like going out and playing games. You cannot feasibly run an arcade without offering
alcohol,
booze. You can't. No, because you have, because you need the markup. You need the markup. Places like Nickel City managed to do it because of parties and stuff like that, you know, and all that, like birthday parties. But most arcades can't cut it if they don't have something high markup like beverages. And I think barcades will stick around. And I think pinball is still going to see a resurgence in popularity in Soul Arcade machines.
I think that might help it, having the barcades, and they'll have more machines. Yeah. Jersey Jack, second pinball manufacturer, maybe we'll get a third, and then it starts. Yeah, who knows? But like I said, I played Wizard of Oz. It was very well polished. It was fun. You might not like it perfectly, but I mean, it's a new machine.
No, I want to play it. I heard Star Trek looked cheap, whereas even if I don't like the rule set, there is artistry and beauty in that Wizard of Oz machine. It's gorgeous.
It looks good.
Yeah.
And they're going to do The Hobbit, which will probably look really nice next year, whenever that comes out.
2014 is when they're doing it. Yeah, next year.
Okay. This is from at Commodore Fan 64. Oh, we skipped Mark's. We'll do this one first, though. At Commodore Fan 64, what do you think about the Mad Catz micro console at $250 with all the new consoles coming out? I have no idea what that is.
Honestly, I hate to say it. I have no clue.
Sorry about that. This is from at AED at Work, Mark Carr.
Mark!
Of Indie Game Searchlight, also on the Punk Effect. Question for Ian. Knowing you love DuckTales, I played Shovel Knight, and I think you'd love it. Thoughts?
I think it looks really nice. I don't know a huge amount about it. I will definitely play it when it's released. But more than anything, I just know that the sprite work on it is gorgeous, and I really like the way that it looks. And I will definitely check it out when it comes out, especially if it gets any sort of release on a console, because I just don't PC game. So any quick, fun-to-play game that finds its way to Vita or PSN is something that I will probably buy sight unseen. Like, I don't need to know anything about it. Shovel Knight I know a little bit about, so I'm in.
All right. This is from at Cygnus Destroyer.
Matt,
what effect do you think the success of the Mighty No. 9 Kickstarter will have on Capcom and the Mega Man franchise?
I don't know if it's going to have a lot of impact on it, but I do think there's a lot of people at Capcom fuming over their idiocy when it came to them being like, we can't do another Mega Man game like this. It's just not going to work.
Well, they canceled two Mega Man games, not just one.
Well, they canceled those after Inafune left over the fact that, well, he had a lot of differences with them, but one was that they wouldn't let him make the games that he wanted to make. So he leaves and is like, here, I'm going to make a game I want to make, and he raises a shit ton of money. And Capcom's like, well, I guess we were fucking wrong, weren't we?
They still can do it. I mean, what was the rumor that Mega Man was going to be in the Wii U Smash? Guess that was a rumor.
It's not a rumor. He's in Smash. Confirmed? He's in Wii U and 3DS Smash.
Well, there you go. That's probably a way to test the water. Even though I mean that's their most beloved franchise, I don't know why they wouldn't. But you'll see it. Maybe you'll see a revival of the Mega Man universe game that was.
It's never
going
to be the same. The heart of it's gone. It's
maybe they'll ask him back.
And I don't think he'd take it. That is the saddest thing about Mega Man to me is if Capcom's like, oh, we were wrong. You still are never going to truly get Mega Man back. The guy who was involved in every single game left.
So if they threw a ton of money at him, he wouldn't come back if he got control over it?
Maybe his outside consulting, but I mean, he's not going to go back to Capcom. He left Capcom for more than just Mega Man reasons.
I'm sure. But if it's his baby, so to speak, maybe he
would. I said, you're right. If they were like, here's a whole grip of money, tell us what to do, but you don't have to be part of us, then yeah, he'd probably do that.
They can always sue him. I'm not sure what copyright infringement is like there, but...
You've played Fire Pro?
It's weaker than here, I do know.
You've
that.
Played Fire Pro Wrestling? Yeah. It's basically non-existent.
If that was a U.S. enterprise, he would get sued, probably. Yeah. He would get sued. But no, it's best of luck. I think it's great. It's competition. If it forces Capcom to come out with a new game, whether it's a new Mega Man X, whether it's the Mega Man universe.
Let's broaden it.
The Mega Man universe was so heavily promoted. Remember the videos
the video
for
was
it?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's broaden it beyond Capcom. What I hope is that other companies will look at the Mighty No. 9 Kickstarter and be like, there is, and people called me a hipster for this. It's not. It's just, it's a matter of time and what you have to play and what you want to play. I hope other companies look at this and go, we can still put a decent amount of money into a game that plays quick and fast and difficult, and it won't be a wash for us.
Sure. And so maybe it goes back to the collective. Maybe other companies do the same thing. The Capcom collective.
Sure.
Maybe my number 9 was a Capcom collective in disguise. Woo!
All right. That was spooky.
One or two more questions we have left. This is from at Spirit31K. How do you feel about game remakes / HD re-releases? I feel like they're going Hollywood all for the money and not much substance. I think it depends on what title you're talking about, really.
I feel like we also kind of covered this a little bit last week when someone asked, last podcast when they asked, what else would we like to see an HD remake of? And for me, the answer is, I don't think it's necessarily. I guess they're going for the money. I don't feel like, and this is the thing, I'm not really that malicious about the DuckTales thing. I just feel like it was misguided. Or maybe it was properly guided for the people who downloaded it, played it, and loved it. But for me, I just wanted the same old game with a fresh coat of paint.
Yeah.
So that's the problem that these developers are finding themselves in. Do they just slap a coat of paint on it and release it? And a number of players will call them cheap and lazy. I wouldn't, but a bunch of people would. Or they have to change a bunch of things, and you get people like me who are like, I don't want to touch it because it's different, and then you get a lot of people who like it. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I don't know that they're going all Hollywood. I don't think they know how to do it.
Yeah, I think that, again, they don't know what that sweet spot is, if there even is a sweet spot.
Right.
You got annoyed at DuckTales Remastered, which you still haven't played, just because they added in some MacGuffins and some cutscenes.
Make you go through every part of every level.
But again, some people might have said, well, what the hell? This is the same game. Why should I buy it
if they didn't put that in? I understand the people who like it, and I understand why they like it. I understand why WayForward did what they did. It's just not for me. And a lot of remakes are probably going to fall victim to those same traps.
Speaking of that, I have to comment on last time when the question came up about the remakes or sequels. I think it was actually a sequel. What modern sequel? And I said Google 13. And someone was like, but Pat, they had a fat conspiracy.
That's not a modern sequel.
And I was just like, you don't realize it? That was a sequel? I was like, and I remember saying in the comment that, yeah, I have it sealed. But also, it's right next to the other game.
Yeah.
You do not think that I know that these are sequels to one another? Like, this is the sequel to this? It's next to it on the shelf. It's been there for years.
I'm not even responding to my critics as harshly as you are.
But that just got me because I'm a huge fan of these games. You don't have Google 13. I'm a huge fan. I have so much Google 13 shit in my garage that I took over from Jersey. I have probably more merchandise from him than anyone living in the U.S. And that may not be hyperbole. You know, I have stuffed animals from Japan sitting there. I don't have any condoms, though. Google 13 condoms.
You should get some.
I should get that. But anyway. Yeah, it's a modern sequel. Google 13 would be nice.
Next question. I got it.
That's the last question, actually.
That was the last question.
For this week.
Well, I can't wait to see how arrogant I was this time.
Well, you're always a little arrogant. That's why I love you.
I don't mean it seriously. So is that it? Are we done?
We should probably recap what was going on.
I just finished my beer, so that's a pretty good ending.
Is that how we're marking the end of the podcast? When you finish your
coffee? when I get down to the bottom of my tall can, I guess. I can't go for another.
So we gotta test the marathon setup next week. I gotta do a new punk episode.
You'll do a basic test. God. We'll do a full test. Don't worry about the next punk episode until after the marathon. After the marathon, we'll work on our secret project again.
Yes. We go all out.
Hardcore mode.
Get your ass to MAGFest.
Fuck off.
new ass Frank will be coming out within a couple days. And yeah, we're on Stitcher now. We're on iTunes. We're going to take over the podcasting world. Well, this is our fourth one. I'm surprised you lasted this long.
It's easy. Well, I'm surprised I am too. It's easy enough to forget that there is no camera. Most people probably just listen to this on normal mode.
No, most people watch it on YouTube.
That's awful.
People want me to upload the whole thing to YouTube. I refuse to do that because that's then why I have a podcast.
Yeah.
At that point,
being on video makes me nervous.
Makes you nervous. Yeah. You're protected. You have your hood on. Your magic hood.
Yes, I do.
All right. So that's it for our podcast, the completely unnecessary podcast. It's a mouthful for October 9th, 2013. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
We love you, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll see you 3 days after the marathon. Don't sit up. Yeah, we're not done with it. You have to see. We'll see you 3 days after the marathon. That'll be fun, recapping our struggles and joys and pains from that.
3 days after the marathon?
That'll be fun. That'd be a fun time. You'll be recovered by then. Don't worry.
I'm actually working too.
As people have to get a nice shot of your crotch there. As you're standing.
It's cool. It's bold.
It's bold. It's bold. All right, guys, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Thanks for being a part of this Swarway.
Bye-bye.
Bye.